Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Are you feeling sad and overwhelmed by the state of the world? Do you also like drawing attention to yourself with the least amount of effort possible? Then we have the app for you. Introducing TP, the Thoughts and Prayers app.
Awesome. How does it work?
Just download it to your phone. Then once a tragic event occurs somewhere in the world, TP will post thoughts and prayers on your behalf for all of your friends and family to see.
Cool. There's been a mass stabbing in New York, and my thoughts and prayers were automatically posted. I feel like a better person, and I didn't have to do anything.
And you'll never have to again. Forget about cumbersome donations or boring policy changes. With TP, screaming into the void has never been easier or better for your ego. Thoughts and Prayers app, when you want people to know that you care.
Hey, Jacob's Well, I'm Paul. I'm guessing that kind of rings true for a lot of you. But on the flip side, I do want to point out, if you encounter a situation, a tragic situation, often you'll see it on social media, it's kind of weird. You don't really know what to do in that situation. If you donated to all of those situations where every tragic thing that came up, you'd quickly find yourself running out of money. But also, if you post thoughts and prayers, like, that feels kind of weird, but at the same time, that seems like also the only thing you can do. So I'm genuinely curious, if you could write on your comment card, what do you do during these times? So I want to say that I'm praying in those situations, because I am a person of faith, and I feel like that does something. But then this kind of little voice in my head, this Bill Maher voice, comes in my head, and I want to play a clip right now of what he would say to me as soon as I post thoughts and prayers.
First of all, I'm so sick of all the reactions. I'm so sick of thoughts and prayers. First of all, thoughts are the opposite of prayers. A thought is, what should I do? A prayer is wishing on a star.
I hope some of y'all felt personally attacked by that. Because I do. And despite what he says, I firmly believe prayer is powerful. And that's because prayer pushes us to act. And that seems kind of counterintuitive, especially with all of this talk around thoughts and prayers, this idea that prayer pushes us to act. But let me give you an example. So let's say I see a person who's struggling with homelessness on the street, maybe someone holding a cardboard sign, and want to do something for them, but I don't want to give them money because I know that then they might use that to buy drugs, and that's part of the vicious cycle. So maybe I pray about it. Maybe I pray something like this, and you'll see how prayer pushes us to act. I might say something like, God, help these people struggling with homelessness, keep them warm, shelter them, feed them food.
You could feed them food.
God, I know this is a massive problem that has no one solution.
You could be part of the solution.
I just pray for all those people helping.
You could help.
That you would lift them up.
You can lift them up.
Make their tasks easy.
You can do that.
God send someone.
I choose you.
Anyone.
You.
Not me.
You.
I'm too busy.
So is everyone else.
You can do all things, God, but I can't.
I need you.
Nope. Prayer's all done. Stop talking, God. I don't want to hear it anymore.
I choose you.
No. That's kind of a farce. I'm guessing most of you don't have that kind of very casual conversation with God every time you pray. I know I don't. But the voice that I do hear is that a very, very tiny voice. And it says, what are you doing? And it's not meant to be accusatory or shameful, but it is just an honest question. What are you doing? This Sunday, or this last week, we made a collection of prayer hacks. So we made these little cards, and all of the staff put their favorite prayer kind of practices, their prayer hacks on them. And you can see it's got a QR code on the back, or it's just got a link. It's just jacobswell.net/hacks. And I was reading through these, and one of my favorites comes from Katie. And she said, there's a lot of times where she feels really self-conscious saying, I want to I'm praying for someone. So she doesn't feel like she can pray for someone, or at least say that, because maybe that person doesn't want that, or maybe that just feels awkward in the moment. But what she always feels like she can say is, I'm sending love. So I'm sorry this happened, but I'm sending my love to you. And almost everyone can tolerate that. Almost everyone feels uplifted by that. But I found it really funny, because to me, prayer is saying, I love you. When you pray for someone, what you're doing is you're saying that I love you and that I want you to be lifted up. I want you to practice this just for 20 seconds. Just think of one person, maybe an acquaintance, maybe someone you're really close with. Think of one person and just send them love for like 20 seconds. Maybe that's something that's really powerful for you. Maybe that's something that's not. But either way, loving someone cannot be separated from acting on their behalf. And prayer pushes us towards loving other people. And when I say loving someone, I'm not talking about the kind of casual love that we have, like, oh, I love that restaurant, or oh, I love that band, or oh, I love this neighborhood, but more so that deep kind of love that you feel where you would die for someone, the kind of love that a parent feels for their child or a family member, the family members feel for each other. And so when you're praying for someone in this ideal way, you're not saying, go away. You're not saying, stop suffering so I don't have to think about you anymore. What you're saying is, I love you. And when you're saying, I love you, that is pushing you to act, maybe in just a little way. And it gets this idea that we have of rope, this idea that we talk a lot about at Jacob's Well, where you have these three strands. You have your self strand, your God strand, and then your whole world strand. And prayer is one of those things that helps weave these together so that you can see yourself connected to the people around you, and that you can see yourself loving them more and more and more. There's a really good story in the Bible in the Old Testament, probably one of my favorites in the whole Hebrew Bible, and it's the story of Esther. Esther is a queen of Babylon, but she's also Jewish, but no one knows that she's Jewish. And the Jews in Babylon are this sort of kind of repressed minority, very similar to the Rohingya in Myanmar or to the Kurds in Iraq, of people who don't really have their own country, but are living in a certain place and are still persecuted in that place. And so she's hiding the fact that she's a Jew, and from King Xerxes, which is the King Xerxes that you're thinking about from 300 and from all of, and the, he has a street over in St. Paul. And so Esther is hiding the fact that she's a Jew from King Xerxes because she's afraid of what he might think. And one day Haman, the villain in this story, comes forward, and he brings forward this plan to kill all of the Jews in Babylon, essentially, to exile them or get rid of them in some way. And Xerxes, since he doesn't really know any Jews, is like, yeah, sure, that's a fine idea, Haman. You've had good ideas in the past. Let's just go forward with this one. Which is, there's, you should go read the whole book of Esther, because it's really good, but I'm skipping over pretty large chunks here, just so I can bring it here today. And Esther sees this, and she gets worried, and she gets a message from her uncle Mordecai. And Mordecai is one of the people who got her into this queenship, into this role in the first place. And Mordecai says to her, you have to do something about this. You're married to this guy. You can tell him. You can tell him to stop this plan. You can tell him to kick Haman off of the royal court. And Esther says, but you don't understand. There's a rule here that if I go and talk to the king, and the king hasn't talked to me or hasn't given me permission to speak, they're going to kill me. And I'm not going to be any use to anyone at that point. And he hasn't spoken with me for 30 days. Which is a funny thing in itself, that you wouldn't speak to your wife for 30 days. There's some other issues going on there. But she brings this protest, this valid protest, and Mordecai says, well, You can either die at the hand of the king for talking to him, or you can die along with the rest of us when all of us are wiped out. Those are your two choices. Either way, you're going to die. One way, you can save your people. And so what Esther says is she asks Mordecai and all of the Jews in this area to pray for her, to fast with her for 3 days and three nights. And they do this together. And during that time, she's given this strength. She recognizes her connection. She sees the love that she feels for the people around her is greater than the love that she feels for herself. And so after these 3 days, she goes and sends a message to Mordecai and gives probably the most badass line in the whole Old Testament. And that is, if I die, I die. I will go speak with the king. And he's just like, hell yes, Esther, that's so cool. And she got there through prayer. She got there through realizing what's really important to her, through recognizing that these connections that she felt with her fellow people, those are more important than the value she put on her own life. And the story does have a happy ending. She goes, talks to King Xerxes, and King Xerxes changes his mind back, and then Haman is killed, and all the people who are conspiring with Haman are killed. It's a nice, tidy little ending. Very, very much the Old Testament style. But it's important to note that this is one part of why prayer is powerful. Prayer pushes us to act. But there are so many situations where action or fixing things is not even possible. And prayer is more than preparation for action. Prayer leads to an unveiling of God in the world. It leads to a recognizing of our place in the world, our wovenness in the fabric of the universe. Prayer is uniting. It lets us see ourselves as capillaries. Let me explain this idea for a moment. If all of us think that we're aortas, that we're all of these arteries, then we have so much to take care of, and we have to do everything ourselves. But if we see ourselves as capillaries, as part of a greater whole, recognizing that, yeah, I have a responsibility to act, but also I can't do everything, and I have to listen to myself and listen to my family and my friends and realize when I need to pull back. If we see ourselves as capillaries, as part of that greater whole, suddenly we don't become responsible for the suffering of the whole world, but we become responsible for what we can handle. Greg had this great line when he was talking about making a dent in the last series we were doing. It's all about you, it's not about you at all. You are responsible, but you're not responsible. You have to do some things, but not everything. Because there's so many situations where you do legitimately love someone and you want to act, you want to fix the problem, but you can't fix it. I think of when my parents were dropping me off at college, knowing, like, that guy is dumb. He's going to do a lot of dumb stuff. They wanted so desperately to fix it for me, to fix college for me so that I could go in and have the perfect experience and not make any mistakes, but you can't fix it. There are so many times like that, and that's a lighthearted example, but we all have know people who are in those situations where there's real suffering going on and there's no fixing that can happen. And that's where this second part of prayer becomes so valuable, when we recognize how we are woven together. I was talking with a friend who is in the hospital, and one of the things he said was, when he knew that other people were praying for him, that made a huge difference for him. That provided healing for him in a sort of way. There's this beautiful language in 1 Corinthians that Paul that I'm named after, St. Paul, who the city is also named after, came up with, and it's this. It's in your Sunday paper. It's 1 Corinthians 12:12. For just as the body is one and has many parts, and all the parts of the body are one, so it is with Christ. It gets to this idea of capillaries, this idea of wovenness, this idea that we are responsible, but we are not responsible for everything. That in some ways, yes, we are alone, but also in many ways we are together. And that's one of the most beautiful things about prayer to me, is that prayer helps us to zoom out. Prayer helps us to see with a greater perspective. I preached last week, and Jesse Stenross was wonderful and wrote in a little comment about one of those experiences of zooming out that she had in Taizé, France. And so, Jesse, if you would come up and share your experience.
Definitely. Well, how do I put into words a transcendent experience? Is it even possible to put it into words? During the summer of the year 2000, when I was 16 years old, I had the opportunity to travel on a spiritual pilgrimage to an ecumenical Christian community in southern France called Taizé with my high school youth group. Thousands of people in their teens to 30s travel to Taizé from all over the world and every year, and they grow together and learn together and live together in this community. During my time spent at Taizé, I lived a very simple life, free from all distractions, enabling me to simply just be and be together with others. I cooked and cleaned and ate and prayed with other visitors from all over the world and from other countries. And each day at Taizé, we attended three different prayer services. During these prayer services, we all gathered in a large room, dimly lit by candles, filled with monks of all sorts of different backgrounds, Protestant and Catholic and from all different countries. It was really amazing. And during these services, they were very simple services with short musical chants, often sung in Latin, repeated over and over again, followed by at least about 10 minutes of silence for prayer and meditation. And carving out this dedicated time several times a day to just sit and think and pray was really transformative for me at a pretty young age. So prayer became easier, and a sense of peace and clarity washed over each time we gathered in this space. The more we did it, it just became more comfortable. Being at Taizé was absolutely a not experience. Didn't know those existed until coming here, but now I do. I grew so much in my own spiritual journey, my self-strand, and then feeling a part of something bigger than me by sharing this experience with not only my friends that I went to Taizé with from my little group in Michigan, but also these new friends that I met from around the world and that I still talk to, some of them this day, almost 18 years later. But also I feeling God kind of woven in there in the quiet moments of reflection and prayer, and in the songs and the chants and in the tents that we slept in together and the simple chores we were asked to do around the village every day and in the people around me. But perhaps it's easier. I was really struggling trying to explain this when I was writing it out because I think it's you really have to experience it, but hopefully you can get kind of a little glimmer of what that was like. And you'll get a chance to experience a small sliver of Taizé in a minute here. But I actually traveled back to Taizé once again when I was in college because I loved it so much, and I still continue to seek out these services that actually happen all over the place, and several of them occur here in the Twin Cities. And if anyone's ever curious about checking it out, let me know and join me sometime. But I'd like to share with you a song from Taizé right now. It's called Ubi Caritas. And we will sing it through about four times. So if you could just kind of join us in that. And either just kind of, if you don't choose to sing, if you can just shut your eyes and listen. Or it's sometimes helpful to kind of look at the candle while you're doing this. And we'll try it out together.
Ubi caritas et amor. Ubi caritas Deus ibi est. Ubi caritas. Caritas Dei.
et amor, ubi caritas Deus ibi est, ubi caritas et
prayer is a thin space. Prayer can make thin spaces happen. And for you who aren't familiar with this language of thin space, it's this idea of a place where your connection with the people around you, where your connection with God feels particularly strong, where you don't feel scared or hurt or angry, but where you just feel very much at peace. Maybe that prayer was a thin space for you, maybe not. And I want to say thin spaces, it's not just in Taizé, France, although Taizé is certainly a thin space for a lot of people. But you don't have to go on a spiritual pilgrimage to experience a thin space. It can be just as simple as waking up and seeing the sunrise and thinking, this is beautiful. This is beauty. I feel connected now. Some people find those thin spaces when they're out in nature, when they're hiking or when they see some kind of animal moving around. Some people feel that when they're playing music. I know for me, when I'm singing, I find that to be a thin space, a space where I'm not walled off. Prayer is also the death of the ego. And give me a second to explain this. The ego always wants to say, me, me, me. It's all about me. I've got to fix everything. Everything centers around me. It's very, very responsible, at least to the self. But that thin space isn't like a wall that's between us and God. It's not like we're here, God's on the other side, and there are these thin spaces where we can like poke our finger through. That thin space is within us. That thin space is within our own shield that we put up. And those thin spaces leave us really vulnerable in those moments because you are really open and you are willing to love people in a way that you might not feel comfortable with otherwise. And that's one of the big scary parts about prayer is that it kind of makes these thin spaces in our walls. It makes us much more willing to love the other people around us. It makes us more willing to act in ways that maybe we wouldn't otherwise. And I'm guessing all of you have had some kind of experience of a thin space. Maybe that's out fishing. Maybe that's out spending time outdoors. Maybe that's playing music. Maybe that's cooking food. Just a space where you feel really comfortable and you feel, hey, a space where you feel in love with the world and in love with the people around you, in love with God. That's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about a thin space. Children are very good at finding those thin spaces. And for those of you who have experienced it, you know that this is worth it. You know that these thin spaces are worth it, and that I think so many of us find ourselves attracted in going back to these thin spaces again. I know for me, a thin space is the Boundary Waters, and I find myself trying to go back there every year as much as I can. After all, prayer is essentially saying, I love you. And nothing is more connecting, nothing is more dangerous, nothing is more uplifting and scary than loving another person, than reaching out and saying, will you be with me in this moment? That's a vulnerable position because the other person can say no. And you might hear maybe God saying, you might hear God's lack of response as a no. But those thin spaces, when you really do inhabit them for long enough, you find that it's worth it. And you find peace in that, and you find being, and you find a wovenness that you can't experience in other places. And it's not always God saying, oh, well done, good and faithful servant. But it might just be that experience of seeing another person and loving them or crying over a piece of music for a reason you can't really understand. So we've talked a lot about love today, and there's a couple here who are getting married, and I really wanted to do a blessing for them, a way to show them that we love them in this community. So Kayla and Steve, if you would come up, what we're going to do is a laying of hands. Some of you have probably done a laying of hands before. I'm guessing most of you haven't. It's a pretty old Christian tradition where everyone gets up and then we go and we put our hands on these two and like the shoulder or the upper back, just to be clear. Let's keep it PG for our laying of hands. So I invite you in this moment to stand up, and as we're all walking in, and as you, if you can't put your hands on them, put your hands on the people that are touching them so that we form one giant community around them, and let's all just gather around. God, we pray in this time that you would uplift these two, that they would see all of the joy and the love and the celebration that comes from marriage. And we also pray, we pray that you would be with them in those moments of distraction, those moments where they fight and they argue. We know that those moments are coming, and we pray that during those times that they would still have hope and see the people around them that love them, and that they would see all of us who surround them in this moment blessing them, but also surround them moving forward in every moment to come. In your name, we pray.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.